This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Thursday, June the 21st. I'm Angela Denning. Petersburg homes and businesses were without power for over an hour yesterday. The outage happened around 5:30 yesterday evening. Petersburg Municipal Power and Light workers found that it was caused by a bad transformer located around 3 miles of Mitkoff Highway. The transformer is 13 years old and feeds 5 homes in that area. Utility Director Carl Hagerman writes that there's no exact determination why it failed, but suspects the age of the equipment and the warm weather contributed to the transformer failure. Petersburg Municipal Power and Light is running backup diesel generators this week as annual maintenance work is done on the power lines connecting Petersburg to 2 hydroelectric power plants on Mitkoff Island and the mainland south of Wrangell. Hagerman thinks that the outage may not have happened if the community had been on hydropower. He writes that the backup diesels are more susceptible to being knocked offline when there's a localized problem like this on the electrical grid. Some parts of the local electrical grid had power restored in about 45 minutes. Other parts of town were without electricity for closer to an hour and a half. Yesterday, the state learned how much of the $200 million in federal funds it will receive for the 2016 pink salmon season in the Gulf of Alaska. NOAA Fisheries spokesperson Julie Spiegel says Alaska received the biggest portion of that amount, a little over $56 million. She calls this the first step.
I know that no spending plan has been decided on today. We are working with the state to figure out a spending plan, and then we'll go forward.
The 2016 pink salmon season is one of 9 other fisheries disasters and the only one in Alaska. The Secretary of Commerce granted Alaska, California, and Washington state funding last year as part of money set aside for natural disaster recovery, and current Secretary Wilbur Ross allocated those funds yesterday. According to the press release from NOAA, the agency disperses funds according to revenue loss. Sitka's salmon fishermen are worried about the state's strategy for renegotiating the Pacific Salmon Treaty. That's the document between the United States and Canada that allocates the king salmon harvest across borders and expires at the end of the year. As Emily Kwong reports from Sitka, the fleet took to the seas on Tuesday to send Governor Bill Walker a strong message not to sign a bad treaty.
Governor Bill Walker's agenda in Sitka was pretty straightforward. Meet with the mayor, speak at a conference, hold a campaign rally. He expected all that. What he wasn't expecting was this.
Let us fish! Woo!
2 dozen fishing vessels are parading along Sitka Sound on a blazingly sunny day. They're blaring boat horns and shooting off fireworks. Perched on the bow, one troller has an orange traffic cone against his mouth, a makeshift megaphone.
Governor Walker, we need you! Stand up!
He's saying, Governor Walker, we need you. Stand up. Salmon fishermen are worried the governor will agree to a Pacific salmon treaty that deepens cuts to Alaska's king salmon fishery. Standing with a group of conservationists and fishermen to greet the governor, Eric Jordan said, it's a tough time for trollers.
We're willing to make the sacrifices written into the treaty, but we're not willing to just arbitrarily have our share reduced.
Alaska's negotiation team does not consider a reduction arbitrary. ADF&G Deputy Commissioner Charlie Swanton told trollers and processors at a Chinook symposium in Sitka last month that the proposed cuts were carefully negotiated with Canada as part of a strategy to protect endangered stocks in Washington State's Puget Sound and to avert a potential federal takeover of the fishery under the Endangered Species Act. But while Sitka trollers are on board with taking their share of cuts to protect fish runs in this region, they're tired of taking the fall for problems elsewhere. The Sitka Conservation Society's Heather Bauscher said the state needs to prioritize Alaskan interests.
You know, where are the positives? What are the things that are being done to support this region?
After arriving by car, Walker took in the whole scene.
Hi, nice to meet you again.
He waved to the vessels, listening to the words being shouted from the decks. He stood in the street and talked with the group assembled. He told them, we're going to try to get the best deal that's available.
I'm known for doing bold things, and so I'm not a very good follower of
this is the way we've done it in the past necessarily?
Walker did not elaborate on what that meant, but lingered, looking at the water, for a few minutes more. We then walk into a restaurant, where there's a single customer eating a buttered scone. It's Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. Walker greets him heartily, and they confer on the boats still circling the harbor outside. Walker said he's keeping an open mind on the Pacific Salmon Treaty, as negotiations are still ongoing.
Well, I have nothing to sign at this point, and what I like to do before I make any decision on anything is I like to hear from all different sides of it. I celebrate that.
What Walker is not celebrating is a potential trade war with China. News broke of China's retaliatory tariffs on American goods on Friday, including 25% on seafood imports. In response, Walker will meet with the U.S. Department of Commerce next week to illustrate what a blow this would be to Alaska's seafood industry and plans for a natural gas pipeline. He's optimistic a deal between the two nations can be brokered before the tariffs take effect.
So I think there's a deal to be made, I really do. And I think that Alaska will be could likely be part of the deal.
Walker said he and Mallott also sent a message to the White House this week, calling for an end to the practice of separating children from their parents at the U.S.-Mexico border. Walker called the separations intolerable. Mallott spoke to the history of Alaska Native children being separated from their parents to attend boarding school.
I was one of those, and as a young person, you don't think about the anguish that grief that just had to have caused your parents. And now to reflect upon it, it just almost takes me to my knees. So I understand fully what's at stake here.
Walker listens intently to Mallott as he talks about this. The two men had an unusual road to statewide public office, merging on an independent ticket in 2014. They speak in turns about the tough choices they've had to make and how their professional relationship has only grown. Here's Walker.
We chose each other. We weren't an arranged marriage. As a result of an election or a primary, we chose each other, and we remained that way.
And they're entering this election season with the raceway crowded. Former Senator Mark Begich filed to run as a Democrat, which means voters will have choices on the left and the right. As an independent, Walker said they'll have to work harder to win a three-way race. But his strategy is to shoot down the middle with a bipartisan message. He said, "We'll continue to be who we are." Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Motorists be warned. Mikhof Highway near Petersburg will be getting more chip seal this summer. The Alaska Department of Transportation is planning to start sealing the pavement on the highway south of Papke's Landing, about 10 miles south of town, after the July 4th holiday. Lance Meerig is the DOT's South Coast Regional Director and explains the work is meant to preserve the existing asphalt surface.
So we are attempting to maintain our pavement in a state of good repair so that we don't have to do these full reconstructions. So that's a chip seal preserves the surface for about 5 years.
The state is doing the chip seal work, not contracting out to a private company. A state crew of about 15 people, including some local DOT employees and some flaggers, have been hired for the job. They've already started work on an upgrade of the unpaved portion at the very end of Mikhof Highway. That will be getting a repaired gravel road base with eventual chip-sealed surface. In July, the state crew will be adding that same surface to the paved highway, working south from Papke's Landing to the mothballed State Ferry Terminal near Mile 25 of the highway. Last year, the DOT chip-sealed several road segments, including Mikhof Highway on out to Papke's Landing. Loose chip-seal material cracked windshields and chipped paint and had the DOT fielding complaints and claims from vehicle owners. Meerig says those loose chips are an expected part of the work.
We put down some oil. We over-coat it with these chips, these uniformly sized rocks, and we compact that into the surface, but then traffic completes the job for us and wears that in, or it moves the loose stuff to the side. So eventually it's clear of loose material, but it takes some time, but that's the chip seal process. So that will continue. There will be loose material until it sets, until we get it cleaned off or traffic cleans it off.
During the project, motorists can expect one lane of traffic and delays, but Murig does not think there will be full road closures.
We try to maintain one lane of traffic with flaggers, and they'll be trying their best to keep traffic moving on along and not having too long of delays. But there will be just short periods where there's construction equipment on the roadway that will let clear and then move traffic through. But for the most part, it'll be one-way traffic.
Murig is hoping drivers will slow down around flaggers and the construction zone. The resurfacing is expected to be done by the end of July. And yes, the chip ceiling will cover up names painted on the highway by senior classes at Petersburg High School each year. Murig, who spent part of his childhood in Petersburg, says he never took part in that time-honored tradition near mile 14 of the roadway. The state also plans to contract with a painting company to stripe the highway later on in the summer. Messy painting work on newly chip-sealed state roads last year also drew local complaints. But Murig says DOT won't be doing the work in-house this year and will revert back to a type of paint that does better in wet conditions. The road work is expected to cost around $2 million. Most of the funding comes from the federal government. Elsewhere in the area, the DOT last fall completed a repaving of a road in Cake and did some additional bridge work there this spring. There are also plans to rehab the runway surface at Cake's airport. The state agency doesn't yet have the funding in place for that work, and it's not expected to start until next spring. Cake's runway won't be completely shut down during the project. Petersburg Mental Health Services is moving its downtown offices to another building owned by the organization. One reason for the move is to make the offices more accessible. Director Susan Omer says since it opened in the 90s, PMHS has offered services from the second floor of the Wells Fargo building, which does not have an elevator. And I apologize for that. She says, what we have done in the past for the last 25 years is they've met people in their homes. We found other ways to make it work so that they have access, but she says it's not really in the spirit of basic accessibility. So this move has been planned for over a decade. The new offices will be on the second floor of an apartment building that has an elevator. It's on 1st and Fram Streets next to the hospital and Salvation Army Church. Omer says PMHS has owned that building for several years and rents out about half of the apartments that are inside. The nonprofit has renovated two apartments that look more like office spaces and will use a third one without converting it. Because they'll have kitchen space, staff may revive a past program that offered classes for cooking on a tight budget. Omer says another reason for the move is that this new space is smaller and PMHS has had to shrink its staff due to cuts to state grant funding. The organization has about 4 full-time and 7 part-time employees, and according to Omer, serves between 200 and 300 people through its programs and individual mental health services. The plan is to finish the move by July 1st without closing its doors to clients for more than a couple of days at the end of this week. The Kluani Chilkat International Bike Relay marked its 25th year last weekend. This year it was wind, not snow, that presented a particular challenge for riders who were making the 150-mile trek from the Yukon to Haines. Abby Collin reports from the finish line.
Matthias Perdon from Ontario was the first biker to cross the white finish line in Haines Fort Seward, breaking away from a pack of other riders. This isn't Perdon's first year making the journey from Haines Junction along the Haines Highway. He's done it twice before, and once, like this year, he rode the entire 150 miles solo.
Yeah, I did it 6 years ago, and it was like a much more challenging day than today. Like, it was... It was rainy, and I got like kind of cold, and I remember being pretty, like, just kind of beat up at the end. And so I always wanted to do it again solo.
Racers can choose to ride in teams or do the whole thing. Despite going solo, Perdon says other riders were still essential to his success.
Even when you're, like, following someone and drafting, there's still that extra kind of resistance. And then when you're at the front, it's harder. So it sort of adds up. But at the same time, it makes the ride, it sort of everyone is a little more like reserved in their riding because you can't get away. Like on your own, you won't get anywhere.
Overall, this year's race was slow, thanks to the wind. Mike Kramer is the race coordinator.
You know, and I'm not a weather person, but in the 50 to 70 kilometers an hour range up around checkpoint 4, like we had an outhouse blow over. That's how windy it was up there.
According to race organizers, this year's fastest riders finished more than an hour later than the 2016 winners.
I think the snow we had last year got traded in for a very, very strong headwind, which made it very challenging for riders.
The 25th anniversary race was supposed to take place in 2017, but that event was canceled amid June snow in Haines Junction. Kramer estimates 50 to 70 teams were not able to finish this year's race. Road conditions on the U.S. side of the race. There's ongoing construction on the Haines Highway, and a section of the road is variable with uneven gravel. But Purdon says he prepared for it, and it wasn't an issue. Overall, Kramer says the quarter-century race was, quote, safe, but very hard. In Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
And I'm Angela Denning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.